Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Candidates' positions on protections for people with pre-existing medical conditions are one of the hottest issues as we head into the midterm elections. 66% of voters rank continued protections for people with pre-existing conditions as the single most important, or at least very important, healthcare issue as they think about the elections next month. And the issue is across partisan lines. 81% of Democrats, 63% of Independents, and 51% of Republicans. At the center of the debate are continued Republican attempts to repeal, replace, or otherwise weaken the Affordable Care Act, including those protections for people with pre-existing medical conditions. That is the focus of our discussion today, and I'm joined by Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, it feels like old strangers getting to know each other again. How are you?
Great, and it's great to be talking with you again. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us. We'll begin, as we usually do, with sort of the brass tacks here. What is a pre-existing medical condition? How do we define that?
Well, it's a medical condition excluded from health care insurance because it existed prior to starting the coverage. And before the Affordable Care Act, when you were purchasing individual plans, you might be denied coverage because of a pre-existing medical condition, or some policies would not cover expenses associated with that pre-existing medical condition. So it was a major problem for those people who were affected.
Could you give me a few examples of that? What are pre-existing conditions as they manifest in people?
Okay, well, the list is very long, so let me just give you a few examples. Asthma, diabetes mellitus, cancer, hypertension, AIDS, HIV, substance abuse, mental health disorders, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, other dementias, arthritis, and even pregnancy.
All right. How prevalent? I mean, this sounds like it affects a big group of people, the list that you just gave me. How prevalent are pre-existing conditions in the American public?
According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 27% of non-elderly adults, that's 52 million, have a pre-existing medical condition. Little bit of disparity across the genders. That's 30% of women and 24% of men. And the difference isn't explained just by pregnancy. So it's very prevalent. If we drill down to here in Tennessee, in comparison to the 27% nationally, we have 30% here in Knoxville. But just up I-81, our neighbors in Kingsport, Bristol, 40% of the people, non-elderly adults, have a pre-existing medical condition, and that's among the nation's highest percentage. So it's a problem nationally, and we feel it a little more acutely here in Tennessee.
How does the Affordable Care Act, at least as it's currently structured, handle these pre-existing medical conditions?
Well, Brandon, the Affordable Care Act, one of the main goals was to make healthcare accessible and then affordable. And when it comes to pre-existing medical conditions, two things were very important. The first is the concept of guaranteed issue, which means a health insurance policy is offered to any eligible applicant regardless of health status. So it does not matter that you have a pre-existing health condition. And the second thing is a little more complicated. It's called an adjusted community rating. Well, community rating means that health insurers cannot charge you more based on your health status, your medical claims, or your gender. But the ACA said they would use an adjusted community rating, so there can be some adjustments based on geography. Some places healthcare is more expensive than other places, can be based on broad age bands and tobacco use. So what this resulted in, what we have with the Affordable Care Act, is no individual plan can reject you or charge you more because of a pre-existing medical condition. They cannot refuse to pay essential benefits associated with a pre-existing medical condition. And once you're enrolled in an Affordable Care Act plan, you cannot lose your coverage or be subjected to higher rates because of your health status.
The Affordable Care Act was approved in 2010. Here we are more than 8 years later. Why are we having this conversation about pre-existing conditions now? Why is this a hot potato at this moment?
Great question, and it's not a single answer. It's a constellation of things. So let's look at that. At the end of 2017, a major tax reform bill was passed. It's now the law of the land. And one provision of that tax reform was the elimination of the penalty for the individual mandate, which some saw as important to be coupled with pre-existing conditions protections. So that happened. And following that, attorneys general from 20 states filed a federal lawsuit. They said, well, the individual mandate is unconstitutional because of the tax reform law, and therefore the entire ACA is unconstitutional. So this would mean that we would lose the protections for pre-existing medical conditions. Well, that didn't alone, those two things, gain a lot of attention. However, fuel was added to the fire in April when the Trump administration, in a break from usual practice, said they would not defend the existing law of the land, the Affordable Care Act, in the federal lawsuit.
What insights can we gain from this current debate about the protections for pre-existing conditions?
Well, I think it's a metaphor for either the support or lack of support for the Affordable Care Act and the growing political division we're seeing in the United States. Wherever you turn, we see either studies or actual examples of the division between the right and the left. It's just in our face all the time. So the debate about what the Affordable Care Act does and how it does is an essential debate for our country. So there's partisan fault lines, but I think there's another thing that's very important that I'd like us to pay attention to. The debate about the Affordable Care Act and pre-existing conditions in particular shows a fault line between the politicians in Washington, D.C., and the American public. So we're, as a country, having strong philosophical struggles about health care reform.
This is not just anecdotal. We actually have some polling data to back this up, this idea of a division between how the public might be feeling and how elected officials in Washington might be looking at those same issues.
Well, I think there's a lot of debate. You'll recall in the summer of 2017 and into the fall, we had three major attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And what we saw then, that public support at the end of those three initiatives, which failed, were strong for improving, not dismantling, the Affordable Care Act. In August of 2017, 60% of Americans polled were pleased that Congress failed to replace the ACA. And there was a large public majority that's clamoring for Republicans and Democrats in Congress to work together to improve the Affordable Care Act. But we have more recent evidence, Brandon. 79% of the respondents to a recent survey from the Kaiser Family Foundation said it's most important or very important that a candidate talk about health care. But when we drill down to pre-existing conditions, 76% of survey respondents support continuing ACA provisions which prohibit insurance companies from denying coverage based on a pre-existing condition. This included 88% Democrats, 77% of the independents, and 58%, a strong majority, of Republicans. When they were asked as a follow-on question, what about charging sick people more for health care coverage, people with pre-existing conditions, 72% of respondents said they do not support this, that they like the consumer protections currently in place for people with pre-existing medical conditions. Again, there were splits, but note, the splits all show a majority, regardless of party affiliation. 85% of Democrats, 70% of independents, and 58% of Republicans. So I think the real issue here, Brandon, is debates in Congress have become highly partisan, highly political, and these issues are highly personal. 57% of respondents to the same poll say that they or someone in their home have a pre-existing condition.
It's less abstract and more a life experience or a personal thing they've actually had contact with.
Right. It's very important to the American public that we offer some protections.
We've talked a lot about, and even in previous shows, the individual marketplace. So that's Joe Smith from Vonore going out to buy his own insurance on his own. What about for people who have employer-provided coverage? And that might be folks like you and I that work at the University of Tennessee, or you work at Scripps or wherever. that you have employer-based coverage. Is there anything for those folks to be worried about?
Yes, Brandon, there are concerns. They're not as direct. Before the Affordable Care Act, employer plans could not deny coverage or charge more because of a pre-existing medical condition. But they could exclude coverage for pre-existing conditions for up to a year. So what does this mean if the ACA protections are removed? This means if someone leaves their employer-based coverage or they experience a life change such as a divorce or retirement or moving to another state and they have to go to the individual market, they would be excluded from coverage. So we'll have that phenomenon, which a lot of people talked about before the enactment of the Affordable Care Act, which was job lock. So some people stay in jobs where they're not happy or they're not doing what they want to do simply because of health insurance.
Our conversation up to this point has really been focused on those protections offered under the Affordable Care Act as it is currently structured and what should happen if those go away. Let's take a look at a different perspective, and that is, what if we keep the Affordable Care Act but alter it or amend it in some way? In other words, is there some viability to the idea that the ACA itself could be changed to maybe address some of the concerns about pre-existing conditions?
Good question, Brandon. My perspective is anything can be improved. And by no means are we saying the ACA as it currently exists is the best we can do. However, thus far, from my perspective, we have not had alternatives that are better or even equivalent to the ACA. These ideas that have been floated, and there are three I'll discuss with you, have not been strongly vetted or they're not well developed. We have heard some talk about subsidized high-risk pools so that folks that are denied coverage could go and get coverage on these plans. Based on past experience here in Tennessee, high-risk pools have much higher premiums, lower benefits, and limited coverage. When you put all the sick people in one risk pool, it's very, very expensive. There's some idea, and it was presented in one of the ACA repeal and replace plans in 2017 to offer protections for people who maintain continuous coverage so that if you didn't have a gap in your coverage, your premium would not be as high. And I think the idea has merit and needs to be further explored. But these other protections that have been offered do not offer fully protections from denial of coverage or protections from higher premiums. And so that's become the measuring stick. There is a very current example that we need to mention. 10 Republican senators, including Senator Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, have filed a bill called the Ensuring Coverage for Patients with Pre-Existing Conditions Act. The bill does several things. It prohibits individual premiums from varying based on health. That's a good thing. They can vary based on age, gender, occupation, and leisure time activities. Not quite sure what the implications of that is. The premiums can vary based on health in the small business market, so they would be particularly vulnerable. And it would exclude certain pre-existing conditions coverages. So it gives you the opportunity to buy coverage, but it does not give you the protection of coverage for that.
As we have talked about in this conversation, this is an idea that does not, it's one of the rare ideas actually in American politics right now that does not fall strictly along partisan lines. So for people who might be concerned about this, or at least you want to learn more about it, what could they do?
There's a lot they can do. One is, I think people need to be informed, and that's a challenge. Sometimes it's very difficult to watch the quote-unquote news these days because you're suspicious about the veracity of what you're hearing and the divisions, but be informed. Find a reliable source. I think you need to reach out to your elected officials and share your perspective. Personal stories are very powerful. You must vote. I just think that that's non-negotiable. We are feeling a lot of stress and strain in our country, the principles of our democracy, and the way to address that is to vote, to get involved, and be informed.
Dr. Myers, as I said at the top of the conversation, so good to see you again. We'll talk again 2 weeks from now. And in the meantime, I've really enjoyed learning more about pre-existing conditions. Keep us posted on that, of course, and thanks for joining us on Health Connections.
Totally my pleasure, Brandon. So good to see you.